It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hey, everybody. This is the one. I'm very excited, as usual, because I have my favorite film critic. Hope Kyle Smith isn't listening. My favorite National Review film critic, Armand White, is here. Kyle Smith is good, too, but Armand White's different because Armand White causes so many problems wherever he goes. Whenever he writes an article, something happens. When he shows up places, all hell breaks loose. He heckles actor. No,
I don't heckle.
No, you don't heckle.
You don't heckle. I put fear in the hearts of the weak.
Yes, yes, that is true.
Or the weak-minded.
So we're going to talk about your favorite movies of 2019 and the Oscar choices. What was the most overrated? Tell me what your favorite movie of 2019 was.
That would have to be Dragged Across Concrete.
Oh, yes! Nice! Now, do you credit me with turning you on to Zoller?
Greg, I give you credit. Yeah. I give you the credit.
Because I did. Tyrus. I was going, dude, you got to see this guy's movies. And I think I talked to you and I said it was Bone Tomahawk. And you were like, you were not that thrilled with Bone Tomahawk, right?
Right. I didn't want to see any more Zoller films after that one.
Yes!
But because of you, I gave Bone Tomahawk I give the next one a try.
Brawl.
Which is Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Yeah.
And after that, I became a believer.
Yeah. I'm trying to get him to do this podcast, but I think he's scared.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think he's scared. Not me. He's scared of Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
He did Corolla's show, so he's definitely not a liberal. Okay. And those movies tell you so.
The movies say so even if he won't.
What did you like most about Dragged Across Concrete?
Aside from the fact that the title described life in America in 2019.
Yes, that's true.
Aside from that, I thought the performances, especially Tori Kittle's, were amazing. Mm-hmm. But Mel Gibson and Vince Vaughn were strong as well.
Yeah. And we talked about – I don't know – did I talk about this movie with you?
Mm-mm. I hadn't seen it yet.
Oh, that's right. The movie within a movie I thought was very interesting where Zoller decides to pursue the life of an – like a secondary character who ends up being a victim. And I thought that was just inventive and disturbing. And also made her husband look like a complete loser. Remember her husband said, go to work and locks the door. She's dead.
Well, he was a loser.
He was a house husband.
She seems to know it.
But
it's consistent with – which is why it's a good film because it's consistent with the kind of terror that all the characters feel, mm-hmm. and with recognize a certain kind of monstrousness that is out there in the world these days.
Yeah, and also, you know what I like about his movies? The role voice plays in it. For example, in Bone Tomahawk, they had a pipe inserted into their throats.
Right.
Remember? And they would do this. That's my impression. And then Dragged Across Concrete, there's something about the fact that they don't have intimidating voices, but they have these tape recorders around their necks. It's just, hello, please give – and they were like beta male kind of like non-threatening voices, but were still kind of deadly and weird. Am I reading too much?
Okay, well, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
What I picked up on I thought was – sorry to say – sensitivity between the characters and characters who would seem – they seemed unlikely types to be together,
right.
But they have something in common, and what they have in common we can all relate to.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I can't think of any other American movie last year that had that perception.
This was a movie that dealt with race in a much more like a closer to the street level than any movie.
Sure. Very honest and very very unafraid and very sensitive again.
Yeah.
And sensitive in what I mean by that is a kind of honesty about what makes us all human, mm-hmm. and what makes us be able to understand each other, mm-hmm. frankly, if we pause to do so.
Yeah, so it was mainly about the relationship between Mel Gibson and the driver, whose name escapes me.
Vince Vaughn.
The driver in the heist who – God, that whole scene at the end.
The actress Tori Kittles. Yes, that character, yes.
Yeah. God, I had a flashback of that whole amazing scene with the gunfight,
mm-hmm.
which is just one of the most elaborately – it's like operatic.
Apparatic.
Apparatic.
Sure. Close enough.
Yes.
The movie's rich like opera.
Yeah.
It also takes a viewer through several different genres. Mm-hmm. It's a buddy movie. It's a crime movie, but it's also a kind of realistic story about life in America.
So, you know, I'm going to send this podcast again to Craig Zoller's people, and they're going to be thrilled to hear us talk about this because sure. I think both of us are saying it's our favorite film. And then Craig will have to go home and go, do I owe Gutfeld a podcast? And the answer is yes. You did Adam Carolla, for God's sake. I know he's listening to this.
That'll be good. He should take it as encouragement. He should keep working.
Yeah.
He's one of the best out there now.
He's also in a heavy metal band, or almost like a death metal.
He's a musician, too, as well.
Yeah.
One of the things that's surprising about his movies is his love of R&B.
Yeah, and he writes – those are original songs he writes,
original
correct?
Songs.
Yeah.
And he had the genius to hire the OJs to sing them. Which meant even if the songs weren't good, they were going to sound great.
Yes, I mean that's pretty badass.
It is.
It really is. It is. That was he did that in Brawl because Vince Vaughn's driving around, he's listening to these songs. He could have bought some other song, but he wrote his own. That's pretty amazing.
Take that, Martin Scorsese.
Yes, exactly. Oh yeah, no. Let's do Gimme Shelter again. Let's pop in a Rolling Stones song that like it always has a street fighting man, or it's usually Gimme Shelter. And oh my God, this is always a big pet peeve of mine. Slow motion and music married to an action makes it seem cool, no matter what it is. So people moving around, the music, it's like.
Yeah, always Gimme Shelter or Layla.
Yes!
From Layla.
Layla!
What is that? Oh, but you're reminding me. I have to tell you, I have a rule. I have a couple of rules.
Yeah.
Not many, but a couple of rules about movies. And The Irishman violated one of them. One of my rules is
terrible.
Well, yes. It was just plain terrible. But one of my rules is. Any movie that's 3 hours long cannot have a slow motion sequence. and he violated my rule in The Irishman.
That's so funny. You know what that's great. Do you know what I love about The Irishman? They felt that they had to include every pit stop and driving moment in the movie. It's like, okay, let's make it into a road picture with senior citizens stopping along the way to smoke cigarettes. It's like some of these could have gone. I know you're building to something, but it's like I don't need to see every time you go to the bathroom, right? I mean, it's just
senior citizens. Remember,
but Joe Pesci was good.
Joe Pesci was good, but what about, speaking of senior citizens, that first scene where he sees De Niro and he says, "What's the matter, kid?"
But you saw Jonathan Morris, the great ex-father, did a great job at the end.
Is that what it is? He's an ex-father?
Yeah, he left the flock.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he got the flock out of there. Terrible joke.
Well, his biggest sin was appearing in The Irishman.
He's going to – no confession is going to wipe sin.
Yes.
All right. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
So let's talk about Quentin Tarantino. Both of us were really – I was surprised by Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because I felt like it was an FU to Hollywood. Or it was like – when I thought about the movie without seeing it, I thought, oh, my God, it's going to glorify violence. It's going to make them hit everybody look hip and whatever. Then I go and watch it and it's not that.
It's not that at all.
Yeah.
No.
How would you explain it?
Well, I have not been a Tarantino admirer, frankly.
Yeah.
And what I hate it most about his films is his kind of a sense of funny sadism, and I hated that about his movies, frankly.
Right. So a perfect example: Reservoir Dogs, the cutting of the ear off the police officer is the humorous sadism because you have that Steelers Wheel song. Is that what you mean? Kind of like
that all the time.
Yeah.
So going into Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I dreaded it because I thought, oh, he's gonna replay the Manson murders and try to make it funny.
Yes.
Or else he's gonna have Sharon Tate get revenge and try to make that funny.
Yes.
I was totally surprised because he didn't do either.
Yeah,
and he responded to the horror of the legacy of that murder that haunts everybody and especially haunts Hollywood.
Right,
and he responded to that, which surprised me because usually there is no social context to Tarantino's movies. They're just teenage boy fantasies.
Yes,
and fantasies based on making a hash of movie history as well.
Right. Yeah.
And he surprised me. I think he grew up all of a sudden.
It's weird because, I mean, it was I felt that what I was watching was somebody telling me that it's the men of old – versus the hippies. Mm-hmm. So Brad Pitt compared to these like hypersexual but kind of ghoulish characters, these women that and the men there that are like, this is the these are the hippies. These are the thing. This is culture coming at you.
Right.
And here's the culture that's going away. And Quentin Tarantino makes it clear which side he's on when he has Brad Pitt beat the crap out of one of the hippies,
sure.
Makes him change attire, refuses the advances of the girls, and then of course the climax, which I don't even care if it's a spoiler, but the climax is a glorious orgy of wish fulfillment, and this is what that culture deserved,
sure.
An absolute getting killed with a flamethrower. Getting beaten to death with a phone.
Mm. Well, given the horror that we've lived with for 50 years ever since the Manson killings,
yeah.
Somehow or other, Tarantino, surprisingly of all people, was able to reach down into that horrific memory, mm-hmm. and pull out catharsis,
yeah.
Expiation, mm-hmm. And it was funny and satisfying.
Yeah,
it was satisfying somehow or another without being inhumane,
right?
Because it's the deepest wish fulfillment.
Yeah,
and perfectly moral, a moral wish fulfillment as well. It's what those killers deserve.
Which is weird because the other wishful thinking and Glorious Bastards, I didn't like.
That was stupid.
Yeah, what made that one stupid? Because I watch Inglourious Bastards and it makes me mad watching it. I watch this one and I'm not mad, but they're both wish fulfillment in a way.
Well, he's trying in both Inglourious Bastards and Django Unchained.
Yeah.
He's trying to rewrite history,
right.
which is the dumb thing. You can't rewrite it. You have to understand it better. Mm-hmm. He understood the horror of the Sharon Tate-LoBianco murders. He understood it, and he understood what we needed, how we needed to feel about it in mm-hmm. order to continue in appreciating our own humanity. He didn't try to rewrite the history.
Yeah.
Rewriting history is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, to me, that's the beginning of why those two films didn't work. But he does something really great in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that people don't talk about, except the people who were afraid of it when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his attitude about women,
right.
Film culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what makes the Tarantino film a much better movie than mm-hmm. Bombshell,
mm-hmm.
because it understands how women are traded mm-hmm. and it understands how women participate in being traded mm-hmm. in culture.
Mm-hmm.
And he's critical of it.
Yeah.
And it's clear that he's critical of it. Without making villains of the women, but understanding how they participate in their own exploitation, which Bombshell does not understand.
Yeah, and are you referring to the Manson followers?
Yes, the Manson followers.
Yeah, the yes. Manson followers, which yes. are like, yeah.
Yes, they're like, there's also that sequence at Spawn Ranch with
yes.
the Bruce Dern character, where even the Manson followers, they're like the Furies. They descend upon a male
yes.
in order to destroy him,
yeah.
and he participates in his own destruction too.
Exactly.
But Tarantino understands that better than anybody who's involved in the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Yeah, and then him during the press conferences where they go, why didn't you let Sharon Tate speak? And he's just you could see everybody on the dais just like shaking their head like, what the hell? What do we have to do?
You know? I reject your hypothesis.
I reject your hypothesis.
Yes, that was nice.
That should be on a T-shirt. All right. I want to get to the controversy of this podcast because I know you and I are going to disagree on this.
Uh-oh.
Yes. I thought A Marriage Story was amazing. You didn't. You found – and I think the flaws that you see in A Marriage Story are real. I agree mm-hmm. with you. But I still feel like there was a message in that movie that – I mean, the fact that the only happy people in the movie were the divorce lawyers, it's just and how good Laura Dern and Ray Liotta were and Alan Alda. It was like these are people taking your money and over a process. It's a divorce industry. I thought I never saw a movie like that. But then again, I never saw Kramer versus Kramer. I never saw a divorce movie before.
Sure.
So this was my first one. And I thought, my God, this should be shown to people before in marriage counseling. But now you tell me why you don't like it, because I know you don't like it.
I loathed it.
Yes.
But you have to ask yourself, why is a divorce movie called Marriage Story? That's because there's a basic dishonesty in it.
Mm.
It's a semi-autobiographical film
right.
by Noah Baumbach.
Right.
And Noah Baumbach has shown throughout his career that he is a dishonest person who lacks self-reflection and self-examination.
Now, you don't like – is there a personal thing going on here?
I've never met him. I've only suffered through his movies.
Don't you have some kind of feud
bad enough.
With his mother? Do you have a feud with his mother?
I don't have a feud with his mother except that she was an undistinguished film critic.
Okay. I love you.
No feud with her.
I love
but,
you.
But it's sad to say that a film critic brought up a child who has no sensitivity for what makes film an art. Mm. And part of what makes film an art is that the filmmaker has to explore himself with some honesty.
The dishonesty here was probably in the infidelity part, right? Because and who he hooks up with, which is and also you can tell that there's bitterness between. I mean, he was married to Jennifer Jason Leigh,
right.
and he ends up living and marrying Greta Gerwig, or I'm not sure they're married. So his life is more of a cliche than what we see in the film. So there's that gap. There's a dishonest gap there, right?
No, his film. I disagree with that. His film is a cliche. His life is a mess.
Okay.
But he has the messy life of a privileged person,
right.
And he doesn't understand his privilege. And he happened to disrespect one of the great American actresses of all time, who is Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah.
And in this semi-autobiographical film, he misportrayed or disportrayed or was false about why the marriage failed. Mm. And he also did not respect – he's never respected her artistry.
Right.
He has her portrayed with Scarlett Johansson as a social climbing bimbo.
Right.
But he's the social climbing bimbo. And he certainly isn't the avant-garde artist that Adam Driver portrays.
Mm-hmm.
But he likes to portray himself.
Yes.
Baumbach likes to see himself that way. And it's false. I guess we're talking outside baseball, but you don't have to know that the film is about Jennifer Jason Leigh to reject its inability to be honest about what marriage is and divorce is, and he can't separate the two.
So I was just going to say that, like, if I came in and had no idea of the loosely based autobiographical, I just found it the whole divorce stuff fascinating to me, and I thought it was well done. It was a horror movie. To me, it was like a scary horror. Like, to watch lawyers being friends with each other, talking about charities, eating lunch together, and then taking all of your money. And then like, basically, they're capitalizing on the fact that you don't get back together. That's the whole thing. That's the story to me. It's the only time you and I – well, we disagree on some other movies that you've suggested, and I go, what the hell? But see,
I would not call it marriage story. It's not about marriage. I would maybe call it Hollywood story because it's about divorce, and they love divorce in Hollywood because of their immorality and because so many people in Hollywood make money off of divorce.
Right.
I think that's what the film is really about. I liked Ray Liotta's performance.
Yeah.
I didn't like Laura Dern's performance because she was just another hateful feminist standard bearer, and she makes that awful anti-God speech, which is why she will win the Oscar because the film appeals to divorce and it appeals to blasphemy.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, I thought it was terribly acted, except for Ray Liotta,
really?
Everything is like an acting school exercise.
Huh, interesting.
All the obvious emotions, all the obvious responses to every situation.
I have to watch this again now that you
watch
say
it again.
This.
Watch it again. And
obviously, him getting up and playing the piano was pretentious.
That was unnecessary. Oh, my God. The Stephen Sondheim songs were cringeworthy.
Yeah.
You're making
me not like a movie I really liked.
Don't like it. And why was that there except for Noah Baumbach to social climb with Stephen Sondheim.
Now, the thing is, I also enjoyed Greenberg, but you hated Greenberg too.
It's the same thing. Greenberg. That's where the divorce began.
Yes,
that's where he began to. It seems as if he began to cheat on Jessica on Jennifer.
Movie. That was like
with Greta Gerwig.
2012, 2010.
And then, Greg, if you can think back to the great period of Jennifer Jason Leigh's career,
yes.
Why on earth would you marry Jennifer Jason Leigh and not write a great film role for her?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you marry her and then cast her in a movie where she's a supporting actress to Greta, non-professional girl?
Oh, that's very funny. I didn't even think of that. And then he ends up going off with her.
Yes.
I didn't even see that.
And this is relevant to Marriage Story because Marriage Story is among other things, a ripoff of Ingmar Bergman's Scenes from a Marriage. That's why Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver are going through these Liv Ullmann, Erland Josephson angst moments,
right?
Which are acting class moments. Frankly, they're not really felt. It's just acting school showing off.
Yes. Okay. Now let's move on to the biggest movie of the year, the Joker. Okay. Joker. Is it Joker. The Joker or Joker? I always have this, but I can never remember. It's like
no, the
preposition. Yeah. So I go back and forth on this film because I feel that it was about mental illness, that he decided not to go superhero or super anti-hero. It's just a crazy dude who doesn't have his meds. and this is what happened. And it's like, and it could just be that simple.
It could be that simple, except what's unacceptable in the film is that he blames it on society.
Mm-hmm.
He blames it on the welfare system that doesn't take care of its patients.
Right.
And that's just horse hockey.
Yes.
And plus, there's something wrong, as another critic friend, Greg Solman, said. There's something wrong with, why would you do what do they call those things? An origin story on a villain.
Yeah.
We're interested in superheroes and how they became that way, how they made their sacrifice. Who cares about a villain? And especially the dishonest portrayal of the villain. Remember how Joker's, mm-hmm. his original origin story is? He fell into the vat of acid. It's not society that betrayed him,
yes.
or destroyed him. That's just more lefty good, victimization.
Good point.
And that's unacceptable.
That's a good point. And to your point, this is like doing an origin story of the Vegas shooter. Mm-hmm. Or an origin story of the Boston bomber, or the origin story of Charles Manson.
Sure.
It's like, why would you do an origin story of somebody? What it can only do is provide sympathy, which it did to me. I developed sympathy because you have this fantastic actor who's playing. Also, there was a lot of pretentious going on there.
Acting school too. Yes.
Yeah. But I loved him in To Die For. He was so good. Remember that?
Oh, that was so long ago.
I know. Sure. That's my favorite. Oh, he was also good in. I know you're going to hate this movie. Oh. What was the movie about Scientology?
Oh, The Master?
Yeah. I thought he was so good in that.
No, thank you. I liked him as Johnny Cash. But I tell you, you got to see – if you saw a few more movies and you do pretty well. But if you only seen the movie he made – that Joaquin Phoenix made just before this called – You were never there.
I did
never
see
really
it.
There. Same performance.
Yeah.
Same characterization.
Walks around the hammer.
Yes. Yeah. Same. same dystopia.
Yes.
Same lack of meds.
Yes.
It's the same. He's doing the same overacting as usual.
Yeah. And that was portrayed as an amazing film. And I was like, is that all there is? Really?
Yeah.
Is that all? That's.
And to think you're going to love this. To think we got rid of Philip Seymour Hoffman and now we're stuck with Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, terrible.
Doing Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I used to see him all the time in Midtown. He never looked unhappy. Hey, do you enjoy Ricky Gervais's Golden Globe tirade?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
I'm kind of over it now. But
yeah,
but it was good for the moment.
Oh.
It was good for the moment.
One more outrage, and then I got to roll. I thought Hustlers was terrible, and for everybody to get all ticked off that J-Lo didn't get a nomination.
It's just her publicist.
Yeah, it's
which is
Benny Medina.
The only people who were ticked off are the media people.
Yeah,
the rest of America didn't care. The rest of America should care more that Paul Walker Hauser mm-hmm. was overlooked for Richard Jewell.
That
to me, that was the most amazing performance of the year.
What was he in? He was in the Kerrigan.
I, Tonya.
He was the only good thing in that.
Yes.
He was so good in that. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, he was great. That was like, I'm watching that. I felt the I, Tonya thing with her speaking to you just pisses me off. But then he would come in and he was good.
He was like
Philip Seymour Hoffman in Boogie Nights.
Okay.
Remember that kind of like greasy, weird, I don't know.
I wouldn't say that because I liked his goodness. I liked his goodness in Richard Jewell. He's the kind of goodness.
He
was the goodness of somebody that we all don't pay enough attention to.
Have you seen Jojo Rabbit? Like, people are telling me to see it.
That's crap.
Okay. That's what I figured. Oh, also, so get this. My wife absolutely loved Parasite, so I go to watch it with her, and by the time they get down into the bottom of the house, I'm already like kind of over it,
mm-hmm.
and people tell me no, you got to stick with it, it's amazing. And it could win Best Picture. I don't know. What was wrong with Parasite?
That it was an Antifa comedy for the cancel culture.
Ooh.
And it's all about – remember that old commie phrase, property is theft?
Yes.
That's what it's really about.
Yeah,
and
it
glorifies that, romanticizes it. And also, nobody seems to remember – maybe you remember. There was a – I'm told, mm-hmm. because I'm not an expert on this, but I'm told that there was a Monty Python skit called Salad Days.
Oh, fantastic. Playing the piano. That is my favorite Monty Python skit of all time. They're playing the piano and then mm-hmm. the arm falls off and the piano starts – he plays the piano with blood spurting out of his arm and then an eyeball's – it's the best Monty Python skit ever.
And I'm told that the party sequence at the end of Parasite is a ripoff of Salad Days.
Oh, now I have to watch it and see. You know, but by the way, almost everything can be traced back to Salad Days. All the gore – remember this SNL with the bass-o-matic or the skits of –
Dan
SNL
Aykroyd?
From 77 to 80, which were bloody. Remember the arm would come off and spit? That was all stolen from Salad Days. And then, obviously, Monty Python and the Holy Grail with a knight getting his arms chopped off.
Sure.
They were the first people to really go into the limb removal comedy skits.
So it's possible that Bong Joon-ho copied Monty Python, but but he also copied Karl Marx.
Yes. There you go.
So it's not acceptable.
On that note, always a pleasure talking to you. I'm going to go see – you have to email me some of the movies that I have to see. So it's a shame that Zoller wasn't recognized. We disagree on Marriage Story, but we will always agree to disagree. Don't you hate that phrase?
I hate that phrase.
Let's agree to disagree. No, I'm going to shoot you.
Okay.
Armin White, check out his writing at National Review. He's a great writer. So is Kyle Smith. I don't want Kyle to get mad at me. But great talking to you.
You too.
Thanks, Glad Kyle. To be here. Thanks, Kyle.
thanks a lot, Greg.
Yes. Thanks, Armin. Bye-bye.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.